SBS στα ελληνικά.
Andrew Chagg is a world-renowned researcher in ancient history who has written several books on Alexander the Great, and he is in Australia for a series of lectures. It is our pleasure to have Dr. Chagg at the SBS Greek program.
I would like to start a conversation, and I would like to ask you, what are the new developments on the Amphipolis tube excavations?
There haven't actually been any new evidence from the tomb itself for a little while, because investigation and excavation, as you may know, has stopped. However, I have been continuing my researches on the topic, and I'm in the process of writing some papers about it, and hopefully eventually a book. The controversy continues mainly about who the occupant could have been. It was the grandest and largest tomb ever discovered in Greece, and still is. It's very confidently datable to the last quarter of the 4th century BC, just after the death of Alexander the Great. There is some evidence on who the occupant might have been. I have strongly advocated the idea that it's the tomb of Alexander's mother, Olympias. That is electrically important, because that would mean we would get the maternal DNA of Alexander the Great from the bones, which have not been cremated. There are a couple of other relatives, close relatives of Alexander, his father and his son, whose remains have been found at Vergina, but they're both cremated, and there is practically zero chance of getting any DNA from them.
You have completed a project to reconstruct the highly influential account of Alexander's reign by Clitarchus, who was one of the historians of Alexander the Great. Could you please tell us a few things about this work of yours?
The most influential account of Alexander's career was written by Clitarchus, and we know that now that it was written in the middle of the 3rd century BC, within about 50 to 80 years of Alexander's death. It was written at a time when all the primary books had been written by Alexander's generals and companions. So Clitarchus, who was in Alexandria at the time, had access to all this information and was able to write a really marvelous account, and very well informed and very deep, of Alexander's career. Naturally enough, it got taken up by many of the subsequent historians in the Roman period, and although Clitarchus' own account doesn't survive, we have their books, especially by Diodorus and Curtius, two Roman period writers, and because they used Clitarchus so extensively, it's always been deemed feasible to reconstruct Clitarchus' work to some extent by combining their citations of Clitarchus with various other bits and pieces we have from other authors. There's also something called the Metsepitome, and there's quite extensive use of Clitarchus in Plutarch. So I thought, well, let's have a go at putting all of this together and get some better idea of what the original looked like. And what I was very pleased about was I was able to put together an account which uses these various fragmentary authors and doesn't throw up any major contradictions between them. In other words, the hypothesis that they are using Clitarchus succeeds in that you don't have to conclude that there are any contradictions, and if there were any contradictions, it might mean that they were adding some material from other authors. That means that the combined account is very useful to scholars in future, and it's something of an antidote to Arrian. Arrian is kind of the preferred academic work by an ancient author on Alexander at the moment, but I think there is now strong evidence that it was edited, well, not Arrian himself, but Arrian used Ptolemy, one of Alexander's generals, as his major source, and there is now strong evidence to suggest that Ptolemy's work was not published by Ptolemy, but by Ptolemy's son, who edited it for politeness before he published it. And it means that although Arrian's work is relatively accurate in what it actually says, it actually has quite a lot of the best bits edited out of it.
All this sounds amazing, but at what extent do you think all these amazing findings will change the perception that we have, the history of the area in northern Greece?
It's more a case of there being a lot of unknowns around Alexander the Great and his family at the moment, and we are perhaps on the cusp of resolving quite a lot of them. There is a real prospect of progress. My research on the tomb of Alexander the Great and on the tomb at Amphipolis, there are specific investigations now that are defined by my work, which could lead to much better information and confirmation of which theories about Alexander are correct and which are wrong, because there are many, many controversies. He remains a controversial figure to this day, as you and many of your listeners will know. Now, I'll just mention some of the specifics just to illustrate that. So, I have suggested that there is a body that was taken from Alexandria in the Middle Ages that we can trace back to ancient Alexandria, and it's now in Venice. And it's of interest. It's not probable that it's Alexander, but it's sufficiently possible that it's Alexander to maybe the extent of 25% probability that it'd be worth investigating those remains. We know those remains are intact, and that there's skull and most of the skeleton remaining, and all you'd need to do is inspect them to see whether the pattern of healed wounds that is reported quite reliably for Alexander is present on the skeleton. Now, at the moment, that body is in Venice in the Basilica di San Marco, and the church is not amenable to having it investigated. Nobody has opened the sarcophagus since the 19th century, and there aren't even any photographs. But I think it's worth trying to push forward on that and trying to persuade the church, because it's really just a matter of inspecting the remains. You don't need to do any intrusive investigations. Also in Egypt, there are a couple of sites that I've now pinned down as being very much worth investigating. One is at the Serapeum of Memphis, near Cairo, in fact, near the Stepped Pyramid, and it looks very much as though the first tomb of Alexander in Egypt was located at that Serapeum in a temple that was built by the last Egyptian pharaoh who fled from Egypt 10 years before Alexander arrived in Egypt. And that area was never fully excavated. It was excavated by a chap called Auguste Mariette in 1850, and that's the last time there was any excavation at that site. More excavation at that site could be very revealing. Mariette never even fully finished excavating the area of the Nectanebo temple, which might have been Alexander's tomb. He got distracted by the bull galleries where he found mummified bulls, and he spent most of his attention afterwards on the other side of the temple. So that's another area of interest. Then finally, in Alexandria, there is a huge ancient enclosure which we know about from antique maps. Most of it has been knocked down now, but we know where the walls ran, and there are still a couple of fragments of the walls remaining. It looks very much as though the really famous tomb of Alexander, the one visited by Julius Caesar and Augustus Caesar and Hadrian and other notable people like that during the Roman period, it looks very much as though Alexander's famous tomb stood inside that enclosure, probably at the eastern end of the enclosure where the central crossroads of the city were. Now, it would be possible to confirm or deny this theory by looking for a missing wall of the enclosure on its western side, and that could be done with something like ground-penetrating radar, despite the fact that the whole area is heavily built up at the moment and you can't really do any proper archaeology. So these are tangible things that with the correct permissions could be proceeded with, and we could get answers to a lot of some of the most important ancient mysteries, especially from the point of view of people of Greek extraction.
And one more last thing, sir. When did you decide that you wanted to become a historian, and where all this passion about history is coming from?
I decided in the 1990s that I'd like to write a book about something of a factual nature, and I was interested in ancient history already, and I knew quite a lot already about Alexander, and I knew that his tomb was a really interesting and complex mystery. And I just thought I'd tell the story of the tomb. I didn't really think I was going to make any more progress. I certainly didn't think it would be possible to define the sorts of investigations that I've just mentioned. But as I worked through it, as I worked through all the complex and quite extensive evidence, it's surprising how much evidence there is and how it extends over a period of, you know, 2,500 years since Alexander died. As I worked through it, various of the old theories started to look very poor, and others of them, which had perhaps been disparaged, started to emerge as having much solider foundations. And so it completely changed my perspective, and I began to see that it's actually going to be possible in the future at some point to make real progress with this issue. And that's quite exciting. It excited me back then. I kind of remember jumping up and down once or twice in the late 1990s when I realized certain things that suddenly made sense of things which people hadn't been able to make sense of. And my excitement continues now and has been fed in recent times by the discoveries at Amphipolis.
Thank you so much for your time, sir.
Okay, you're welcome.
Enjoy your time in Melbourne.
I think I certainly will. I've enjoyed it so far. Thank you very much.
Awesome. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
Ακούστε περισσότερα θέματα στη γλώσσα σας. Επισκεφτείτε την ιστοσελίδα sbs.com.au/greek.